This is the Journeyman Podcast with Steve Brennan and Brian McCabe. Episode 16, Pink Poodles and Parachute Pants. Hey, this is the Journeyman Podcast. I am Steve Brennan.
I'm Brian McCabe.
We are the Journeyman, coming to you for the 16th time. 16. What were you doing when you were 16? Just whatever, come up with something.
Oh, 16 was the best age.
Yeah.
You finally get to stop mooching rides off of friends and trying to date older girls who can drive you around.
Did that work for you, the dating older girls to drive you around?
Like a charm.
Wow. See, you were more popular than I was.
No, that had nothing to do with it. I had a sister who was 2 years older than me.
So oh, nice.
I will try to mack on her friends so that they could drive me around.
Wow, that's good. Did you, how did you do on your driver's test? And in Pennsylvania, we had there was the permit, and back then, I don't know what it's like now, you were eligible at 15 and a half. Did you pass your permit test on the first time? Did you pass your driver's test on the first time?
Thankfully, I managed to pass both of them on the first attempt.
Wow.
And I remember clearly you going through that process before me and setting a precedent of
number of times you could not pass the permit test.
That's right.
I don't know. You get in front of that big machine. I mean, it was before the computers that you have now, and it was this big machine. And it was like the questions were on like almost like slides or something, and you would hear the machine underneath go, and then it would like this test question and a picture would pop up, and then you'd have to use the thing to pick the right answer. It was very intimidating.
Yeah, I think the hardest part about that was that they picked the most obscure questions to ask, so you could read the whole book, and then when it came time to apply it, they'd say, okay, 4,000 yards ahead of you, there's a signal where you have to turn this way and that way, and exactly how many number of feet do you have to turn signal before you, whatever. I mean, it's just crazy.
So, yeah.
I'm glad that's behind me.
I think it's if you're going over 35 miles an hour, I think you have to have your turn signal on 500 feet before the stop sign.
And don't start
under,
this.
Under, I think it's, you have to have your turn signal on 300 feet before the stop sign.
I honestly don't know that. I'm just trying to work with my wife to get her to use her turn signal. Oh. Sorry, Julie. Oh. There goes the bus.
Dude, I love it. Yeah, I hope that couch is comfy. That's
seriously
awesome.
Because Julie gets motion sick, she ends up having to drive pretty much everywhere where we drive together.
Oh.
Which, number one, leads people to believe that maybe I have all these DUIs and I'm no longer allowed to drive.
That's awesome. But
also, it puts us in the awkward position in our marriage of her having to be in control of the driving all the time when we're together, and me having to yield to that and not say things that pop into my mind about her driving.
Right.
It creates a lot of tension sometimes, but I'm working through it.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway. Good. That's good. Yeah, dude, I remember my first, you know, like you pass the test, right? And so whoever took you to the test, you end up driving them home, right? But then I remember pulling into the driveway, and it was my mom that was with me, and I kind of let her off at the house and informed her I'm going driving, you know?
Excellent.
And just that first drive by yourself is pretty awesome. It's an adventure. You know, you get that, maybe it's that guy thing again, but you get that sense of adventure.
Yes.
In your heart. You're like, I'm doing this. I'm all on my own. You know, it's great. There's nothing tethering me to, you know, my house or whatever. Dude, it was good.
That's really funny how you describe that, because you were, which sibling were you again?
I was the youngest.
Seven or nine or
the
something?
The youngest of eight.
Okay, so by that point, your mom pretty much didn't care. She was
right.
Just
oh,
happy
dude.
To get you out of the house.
Yeah, don't even get me started on that. Many therapy sessions later. Dude, I went to college, and my mom's like, there you go. Get out of here, kid. I come back. I'm break. The whole house is redone with
Yeah.
Yeah, don't even get me started.
Yeah,
your sorry,
room,
Mom.
Your room was...
it's no. now like a greenhouse or something. Who knows?
Yeah, that happened to me too. Mine was instantly transformed into an office.
Yeah, well, your room needed a little help anyway. It was... I think we might have mentioned this before, but it was a mess, like forever. For all the time I've known you, it was a mess.
I'm not the most cleanly person. No. I am now as an adult because I've been whipped into shape. But
right. Well, you did tell us a story of when you met Julie and she came to your apartment or your dorm for the first time just to drop in and say hi, and you had just stuff everywhere.
Yeah, socks and underwear hanging all over the room. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
So that's kind of my MO, but I'm better now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the adventure of driving was awesome. But that was 16, man. 16 is it? That's an epic it's an epic number for, you know, for us, you know, as guys, you know, it was putting one step forward into like manhood.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Mm-hmm. It's a big part of our journey.
Yeah. So what's in the news? I don't even want to ask because I know that there really is only one thing in the news right now.
Only healthcare reform is what anybody's talking about.
Yeah.
So you, in our pre-show research stage, where you and I compare notes on topics, you expressed to me that you have some neutrality towards this issue?
You know, I don't know. My wife has been mad at me this week because she's very, very passionate about this. And I am passionate about it, but I think I've resigned myself that I'm not smart enough to understand all of the little intricacies about this. Like, what do you think about it?
You're playing the dumb card, basically.
Yeah, it's so true. I'm playing the dumb card. I'm sitting here saying, I hope these guys know what they're doing. But I don't know what I'm doing, so.
Well, that's a very controversial topic, obviously. My take on it is I don't like politics very much, but I am interested, I guess, in systems and how they work with one another. And this will probably be kind of controversial, but I think that the church stopped fulfilling the role that she's supposed to play in our society. Not totally, but...
Yeah.
When that happened, the government kind of stepped in to fill needs for people who are overlooked that the government isn't supposed to be doing. And so we can now, as Christians, look at it from afar and point at it and say, you're doing that all wrong and government shouldn't be doing that, but the church in America isn't doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Right.
So that's the frustrating thing for me.
So am I reading this right? You're saying the church should be providing health care for those people in need?
I don't know if I would say it exactly like that. I'm saying that the body of Christ is supposed to be meeting many needs of people who are marginalized in society, whether you call them poor or whatever language you want to use for it. Mm-hmm. And we're not doing that. We're not doing it at all. And I'm not just talking about giving money. I'm talking about like meeting the needs of those people. And so.
Sure.
Because of that, the government has stepped in to fill a void that the church has not been able to fill.
All right. And so are you kind of in a wait and see?
Yeah, I guess I would say we just are kind of need to take our medicine a little bit. I would have liked to see the reforms happen differently. I think on a basic level, it's so messed up that someone who had a pre-existing condition or would get turned away, or somebody has something major happen in their lives and a panel of, you know, people get to decide thumbs up or thumbs down if they get to, you know, receive coverage for that or not is pretty messed
up. The whole pre-existing condition thing is a difficult matter because I actually do know a little bit about health insurance and how it works for some weird reason, which we could go into at another date. I am actually licensed to deal with health insurance in the state of Pennsylvania.
I forgot about that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
We don't have to go into that now, but that'll be a good story for the future.
Yeah. And what the insurance companies are trying to keep from happening is they want to be profitable, right? And a lot of these companies are publicly held, and so their stockholders demand that they're profitable as well. And what they don't want to happen is somebody that is just going to cost them a ton of money to just come stumbling in and paying small premiums, thus costing this insurance company a lot of money. So they like to, I'm going to use the word discriminate. I know that's kind of a bad word, but it doesn't have to be a bad word. They discriminate and try to weed out people that they think are very poor risks to cover, and include people who are good risks. And then what you see happen is, even with the people that they accept, the people that are really good risks get better rates on their health care than people that are marginal risks. So, you know, if you have diabetes, they know that there's a lot of costs involved to you having diabetes. So when you come in and say, hey, will you cover me? They're going to say, dude, you have diabetes. That's going to cost us a lot of money. They may say, you know, we're not interested in covering you. Go somewhere else. Or they might say, we're going to charge you more than we're going to charge, you know, the young 20-year-old that has no known health problems. So, I mean, it's a problem of just trying to be profitable.
Right. Well, should healthcare try to be profitable? Is it the goal for them to make a profit, or is it the goal to treat people who are sick?
It is the goal for any publicly held company to be profitable. I mean, the shareholders demand that they're profitable. So up until now, it's been privatized. So one of, you know, what you see is you see companies there to make money for their stockholders are making decisions about, you know, whether they're going to accept you into their healthcare plan or not, you know. So yeah, up until now, I'll put it that way, it is their goal to be profitable, you know.
Okay. And you're comfortable with that?
Well, I'm comfortable with that from a business perspective. I realize that poses a problem when we start talking about the health of our nation. And so maybe it is government's responsibility to step in and do something. What that is, I'm not smart enough to know, you know.
I'll play the dumb card too there.
Yeah.
I think that's where I probably fall off in the debate as well.
Something needed to happen, you know, because people, individuals are getting bankrupted by their own healthcare costs. And I think that there are cases when that's their own fault. And then there are other cases when it's not really their fault at all. Something needs to happen. So I guess we're about to see
we'll find out
how this solution is going to work out.
Now, to shift gears a little bit, let's talk about something more fun.
All right. Like, thank goodness.
Softer, because that was
like
a deep
anything.
Topic.
Yeah. Anything's more fun.
Let's talk about petting puppies.
All right.
I just randomly picked that off the top of my head, but wanted to point out that one of my mentees in Homewood stopped by with his pet pit bull over the weekend, and it was huge.
Yeah,
and
dude.
Scary looking. And my daughters both ran up to it, like, hey, a dog. And I was like, no.
Dude, pit bulls, I know a little bit about dogs. Pit bulls are great with people, generally speaking. Great.
Yeah.
Not so well with the other dogs.
That's what my mentee told me. This boy told me. He said, they're great with people unless I give them the kill code.
And the fact that you can give them the kill code is the problem. The very notion that there's like, you say something in German. And then they become killers.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking, what if somebody accidentally made the kill code like the word the or something?
Yeah,
or something.
That's
random.
No good.
No,
you gotta be careful what that kill code is.
Yeah. So that was a little disturbing, but Kira asked me, she said the sentence, Daddy, can I have a pit bull? And I said,
yeah.
Not in this lifetime, sweetie.
They're cute dogs.
Mm-hmm.
They are. I mean, but they are you know, they have certain traits that just make them very, very hardcore and rugged, and you know, they're bred to fight, and that's the problem.
That is the problem.
So so somebody picked a pit bull on purpose, no doubt, because there's an image that you get when you're walking with a pit bull.
Right.
I'm guessing.
The pit bull is a very popular pet in my neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. The you see that a lot in like Philadelphia. I haven't been in every major city, but you know, the street dog of choice seems to be the pit bull because it says I'm tough. It says don't mess with me.
It could be a protection thing. It could also be an image.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think it could be either one. I mean, it's you know, you're saying you're tough. Maybe that's going to keep somebody from jumping you, but you know, you're portraying a little bit a little extra testosterone with that dog.
I would agree.
Yeah. No little poodles are walking around.
What do you think about that? What do you think about a grown man having a little ankle biter dog? You know, a little cute fluffy type thing. Is that appropriate?
Yeah, I don't know. That it's very tough.
Is that cause for trading in the man card?
I feel very uncomfortable because we've worked with our local dog shelter and I have seen my share of big dogs and my share of small dogs come into my house. And okay.
But you have a balance there to offset the small dog.
Yeah. It's not, let's just say it's not the dog's fault that it was born like a little poodle. You know? That's not the dog's fault. I kind of feel bad for like the guy poodle, you know? He's like, hey, what's up? And then like if he looked in the mirror, he'd realize he's a total wuss.
Yeah. He gets no play.
Yeah. Here's where I draw the line. I will because dogs are great companions, right? And sometimes guys are not in a situation where they can have big dogs, and so they pick a small dog. And I'm cool with that. I am cool with that. I think where I draw the line is once you have the dog, what you choose to do with it. Once you start putting little bows on its ears and the poodles that are dyed pink, yeah, stuff like that. That's where I think that you've crossed the line.
Okay. I'll concede that to you. I'm still struggling with it, but I'll leave it alone for now.
Dogs are, you know, they're good companions, and I don't think we should downplay that, but once you get the dog in the house, you have to do what you can to man that dog up a little if you have any means at all.
I see what you're saying.
You know, some tats.
Some tats.
You know.
A spike collar.
Right, like a nose ring.
Hmm.
A spiked collar, that's good. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's right.
Throw that spiked collar on that Lhasa Apso. Do you remember that dog I had when we were kids that was a little Lhasa Apso? It was my sister's dog, but it was a little fur ball.
Let me think.
Ankle
back.
Biter type thing. You would remember it because its name was paradoxically called Angel, but yet it was
Angel.
Possessed by evil forces.
How old were you when you had this dog?
I would have been probably maybe 11 or 12.
Oh, okay. I don't remember.
No, we can't remember each other's pets, but I'm just saying there's sometimes smaller dogs have a tendency to be, I don't know, bullies or think that they're
Well, that's how they survived as a species, probably.
That's true.
You know? Like, the big dogs can get away with being just kind of like, hey, I'm just going to lay on the floor. Because it's big and nobody's going to mess with it. The little dogs have to be tough, you know? A little dog that's lazy and just lays around, those died off a long time ago. Those got eaten by the pit bulls. So, natural selection happened.
Oh, here we go.
Took care of that business.
Okay. I'll concede that point to you. So you also mentioned to shift gears again. You're yeah. going on vacation. Vacation.
Yeah. Okay. This goes back to a conversation we had a couple of months ago, and I was going through some stuff, and I decided on a couple of things. One is I decided to read Wild at Heart by John Eldridge.
Yeah. All right. Are you done with that or are you in the midst of it?
I'm done with that. We'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
The other thing that I decided is that I needed some getting away time, just some time to find myself and to just put the world behind me for a couple of days and get some rest, right? And you shared also at that time that you do that periodically.
Yeah.
Just kind of getting away. And So I decided at that time that I was going to start the planning phase of kind of my getaway time.
And what did you come up with?
Well, let me ask you first. What the last time you just got away for Brian time, what did you do?
I told you it's different for, yeah, for each different.
One. Different. You're different than me.
Yes.
And each trip that you have taken is kind of a unique experience from each other.
If you're asking what my favorite one was, it was Gettysburg.
Okay.
By myself, going to Gettysburg. I didn't know I was going to Gettysburg, but
okay,
I ended up there. And it was a blast just being by myself, exploring the battlefield, walking around the town. I love history.
Sure.
And it was a great time. And I had a lot of quiet time.
Right.
Where it was a very down, it wasn't a lot of tourists there or anything. So God just had a chance to speak to me. I got a lot of time to read my Bible. And it was an interesting trip.
Okay.
The most recent one, I ended up out at Nemacolin Woodlands, which is a resort out in the mountains, a little about 45 minutes away from Pittsburgh.
And sure.
That was a good one for me too, but not as much rugged as some right. of my other trips.
Well, I have decided, as I am now fully planning my trip, that I'm going to go rugged. I'm going to go as rugged as possible.
Nice.
So this is going to sound kind of weird, but I'm going to throw this out there, but as a little kid, you watched the Brady Bunch.
Oh, here, yes, yes.
All right. This is kind of weird, but I'm gonna kind of backdoor this in here. Okay, so they had this episode of the Brady Bunch, right? Stop laughing at me. Okay, they had this episode of the Brady Bunch where they go camping, right?
I remember. Yep.
Yeah. Now, I don't care about anything else about that episode of the Brady Bunch. So, just cut me a break.
I'm letting that go.
All right. The only thing I want you to think about is, in that episode, when they go camping, they're not at like a campground, with electrical hookups and, they're out in like the lakeside,
okay.
And there's nothing else around,
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking about that some time ago, actually. And I'm like, do these places actually exist? I actually posted a long time ago, this goes back probably a year or more, I posted a comment online asking, do these places exist? Like, how do people do this? And, I got some comments back like, oh, well, if you, are willing to do a 4-day hike into the Rockies and, okay, I'm not there.
Right.
But my goal was, as I started planning my I'm going to call it a me-cation, my me-cation. My Steve-cation. You like Steve-cation better?
I don't know. I need to think about those two a little bit.
All right.
I'll get back to you. I like both of them equally.
All right. So I'm planning my me-cation, and I decided I'm going to go out into the wilderness, and I'm just going to do some camping for a day or two. And I wanted to find a place that I'm not going... A little chance as possible of seeing another human being.
I'm so proud of you.
This Doesn't that beautiful. Sound good?
Keep going, man.
That sounds so good. You
yeah.
know? I don't want to be out camping and hearing somebody's stereo from mm-hmm. his, RV 300 feet away from me, I want to go where there's not going to be anyone around. So here's what I think I found. I'm still figuring it out. I have some calls to make. It's still March, right?
Right.
So some of these places, they don't open until April, and trying to get information is a little sketchy, but I think I found a place that will allow me to, it has a lake, and it has, I believe, a place where I can rent a canoe or a small boat.
That's what I'm talking about.
And they have certain camping areas that are accessible by boat only.
Oh.
Right? How
Dude,
awesome does that sound?
That's perfect.
So perfect. So I'm scoping this out. I'm gonna see if it's possible for me to park someplace, get my rental canoe or something, load it up with a tent and sleeping bag and some supplies, and figure out where I'm going and just head out to the campsite that I have reserved for me and spend a couple of days out there.
so proud of you.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
It is.
When are you trying to do this? Like spring or before the kiddies get out of school?
Well, I think, no, it'll be before that because I don't need the kids to be out of school to do this.
And you do have 18 weeks of vacation stored up.
I do. I do. I have lots of vacation available to me. So I think I'm going to maybe aim for mid-April or something. I'm gonna just play it by ear. I do have some flexibility. I'm going to wait till I get a couple of nice warm days in a row. And I'm going to head out there.
All right, man.
So
you'll keep us updated on how this goes. Are you planning to do anything while you're there or just be? Do you know what I mean? Like, do you have a... Because you're a planner.
Well, yeah, I am definitely a planner. I am planning some things, but they're not major things. Like, I'm planning on doing some fishing, for example, right? These are just things that you would do if you were out, you know, living in Alaska or something.
Mm-hmm.
I am planning on... here's a little bit of a nerdy thing here, but... I wouldn't mind doing some geocaching. Did you ever hear about that? Have we talked about that?
I've heard that's outdoorsmanship for nerds, right?
Yes. Okay. That's a great way to describe it.
Cool.
Where you have a GPS, and I would probably need the GPS to find the campsite anyway. But there are around the world, but especially in the United States, there are hundreds of thousands of items that are hidden, that people have hidden, and they post the coordinates on a website online for others to go and find. And the etiquette is when you find a cache, which is what they call C-H-C-H-E, you find a cache, you can open it up, and there's like usually little trinkety things in there, nothing of huge value.
Mm-hmm.
But you're welcome to take something, and then you put something in there. You leave something of yourself. And then you've found that. And, I imagine, I haven't looked, but I imagine that, you know, within 5 miles or something of wherever I am going to be, I bet you there's a cache or two that I'll be able to hike to. So it's an opportunity to hike, and it's an opportunity to, you know, find, you know, we'll call it treasure, and it's an also opportunity to leave something of yourself.
You are right on, dude.
Yeah.
I think that you're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
What trinket would you leave that represents yourself, though?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I hereby leave my terrible towel for the next person.
Dude, a terrible towel. That would be awesome. That would be good.
It's probably the most popular cache in the whole world.
You know what I found once? I've done this a few times with my kids and stuff. I found a geocache that had some army guys in it, you know, like when we were kids.
Oh, yeah. That's
I'm like,
cool.
Oh, that's awesome. So now at work, you know, where I'm less manly... But at work where I have, you know, I have a few like plants on the windowsills of my cubicle. And I know. Mm-hmm. You see the problem, right?
Yeah, you cannot have plants at your cubicle.
But now my plants have army guys in them.
Oh.
Right? It looks like Vietnam.
I need to distinguish something.
All right.
Are these plants that you place there by choice, or are these corporate plants which are added by the corporation to spruce up the working environment?
No, I place them there. I place them there.
Mm-mm.
But you know, you're looking at it the wrong way. That's my inner heart. That's what wants to be out in the middle of the wilderness. Right? Dude, how do you take a cubicle? I know the cubicle in and of itself is the problem.
Yes.
How do you take a cubicle and make it a place where you can, you know, sit at 5 days a week? How do you do that?
I really don't know.
I know.
I'm the last person you want to ask about that.
I know.
I'll give you that.
Yeah. For me, I just needed some foliage around me. I mean, I don't have like, you know, roses and like calla lilies growing around me.
Okay. Are they like, what do you call those plants that eat flies?
Oh, the Venus flytrap.
Yes, you should get a Venus flytrap.
Those are awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe I will.
All right. If you do that, I'll...
Dude, that's a great idea. You can get those at like Walmart and stuff.
No way.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, check it out.
All right.
If you do that, then I'll be okay with it.
Now, what's the closest thing to a cubicle that you have?
I have a cubicle that I'm at for about 2 hours a week.
All right.
The rest of the time I'm out and about.
Right.
So I see the value of having a cubicle if you need to sit down and do some quiet work for a period of time. And
yeah,
it helps to bring structure to the work environment. Place is important, you know, in terms of finding people. But
right.
I don't spend very much time there.
Right.
So I really need to be out and about all different places at different times.
Sure.
I love unpredictability, and some people can't stand unpredictability. So
yeah,
I see it.
Yeah. I like to be kind of structured, but I definitely, I like to go out and have an adventure now and again.
It seems like you have some flexibility in your job to be able to do that if you need to.
Yeah. So, hopefully, at some point in April, I'll be able to do that. So we have, the next recording we have, we're going to skip a week and we're going to record with Jason, the week after. He'll be in town. And then as early as the week after that is probably the earliest I could go out and do something.
So did Wild at Heart encourage you then to do that? You read through it and you probably sensed some themes from some things I've talked about.
Sure.
Over the last year or so.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, you know, talking with you and just kind of like doing some soul searching. It's in there. I mean, you don't need to read the book to feel that like, dude, I just want to go out and be a man.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And dude, but after I read the book, and I'm going to be, we talked about my, like, not my illiteracy, but my difficulty in comprehending books. So me reading a book is usually me listening to an audio book.
Sure.
So, after listening to that, it was, dude, it really made me see men in today's society in a very different way.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it really interesting how he kind of brings that into focus where our society wants men to be nice guys,
right?
Clean, responsible,
boring, you know, really, really boring.
Right.
You know, it's funny. I have a couple of people that I talk to at work, you know, a couple of closer friends at work, you know, and, you know, I was talking to a buddy of mine and I said, you know, kind of some of the stuff I just said here, you know, what I want to do and how great would it be to go camping and to do this and that. And he, and dude, that look in his eye was like, of like almost envious. It was like, dude,
are we allowed?
Yeah, that's exactly what he was saying in his look. Are we can do that? He looked at me like, dude, that's the craziest idea.
Right.
How in the world are you going to do that? Don't you know you're married and you have kids? And, you know, and because I'm, you know, he didn't say that out loud, but that's what he was saying because he's in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, I said, dude, you should do it. You should just do it. And dude, you know, how, my wife would never go for that. I'm like, dude, you got to sell it better than that because
find a weekend
when you can, you know, arrange to have the kids taken to grandma's and grandpa's, you know, just send them off there and then tell your wife, go relax that weekend, get a spa treatment or something. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. Now Kate's going to want to go get a spa treatment.
Nice work.
Yeah. You know, go, you know, make it something that she can, you know, relax herself and then just go and do what you need to do.
You got it. The main thing is if you're being proactive about it, the pitch to your wife is, first of all, you should read the book together so she understands a little bit more about what's going on. But if you can't do that, really got to say, I need to have some outlets beyond just structured environments because I'm a guy. I need to have some of these outlets. And if I don't have them, I'll find unhealthy outlets to do that. And I don't know. Just let me know how that goes.
Well, dude, I just want to like, I want to encourage like our audience to do some soul searching and what is it that you need that would really just feed that that wild man inside you? You know, maybe it's adventurous, maybe it's even a little dangerous, you know, but you know, what is it that you know that separates, you know, you from what your heart is calling out for you to be?
Agreed. And also, what you're trying to do is it's important that wherever you are, whatever age you are, you, number one, need to figure that out for the health of yourself and your marriage and your family and your friends. But also, it's important to have that figured out so that you can lead other men in that direction.
Sure.
And help it to release them from the bondage of their sterile, nice guy environments.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that, you know, I'm doing this for myself, but I have a secret motivation too, because I know that at some point down the road, me and you are going to be planning the mancation.
Yes.
So this might, I'm going to check this area out, and if it's any good, you know, if it's worth it, maybe I try to convince, you know, a few of you guys to come out there and we'll do it together.
I'm so with you on that.
Yeah.
I think that would be great.
Dude, and you know what else too is it doesn't cost a lot of money for you to go out and be a man.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree with you on that one. Get some trail mix.
Exactly.
Head dude, out you know, there in the wilderness.
You look at it and you're like, oh, that's so eccentric to, you know, I wish I had the time to go out and I wish I had the resources to just pick up and go, but to, you know, make some time, and then there's no very little financial investment you need to go out and just have some time. So
looking forward to that, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good luck with
so,
your trip.
Yeah, when's your next meecation?
I'm due. I got this family vacation coming up next week.
Yeah, that's right.
So we'll get that one knocked out, and looking forward to spending some time with the family. And I would say, you know, probably May or June I'm about due.
Yeah.
Usually every quarter I need to get away, and I can feel it. I can feel it now like I need it, but I'm going to get this family vacation knocked out.
Well, we originally said that, and I can't remember what the date was. We'll have to go back into the archives and hear what we said. We were aiming for like maybe a June or something for the...
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna hold you to it.
Okay.
How's the planning going on that, by the way?
No, Jason was supposed to plan that.
I don't think... Was he?
Yes, we talked about this, yeah. Steve.
I remember you making fun of him.
We'll see him. We'll bring this up in our next podcast with him and see what progress he's made.
Right.
The gauntlet was thrown, and I don't know if he's really advanced at any.
Well, I'm willing to run with the ball if need be. But yeah, like so the deal is for me is it has to be kind of primitive, have a primitive aspect to it, and it has to be cheap.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
Right.
I wanted to ask some advice from you. I'm taking the girls to Florida. We're driving.
Yes.
Making a pit stop at Jason's house.
Sure.
In South Carolina. And then, but it's going to be a lot of time in the car. And I know you've done this before. So what do I need to do to make life good for my daughters?
Oh, yeah.
In the backseat. And also for my wife and I.
Yeah, that's the key. Like, if you make them happy, then you and your wife are happy.
Okay. So bribery, is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah. Well, I've mentioned a couple of things in the past that I would definitely do. But I'll bring them up again in case people haven't, you know, hadn't listened to an older episode. But a must for us was go to like the thrift store or the dollar store and get a bunch of really cheap crap. And then don't let your kids see it. Don't let them even know that you went out to get it. Wrap it up maybe in some nice wrapping paper that you have left over from Christmas and tuck it in a bag, you know, under the front seat or something, right? And that's there to distribute at your leisure, right? And if the kids get unruly, then you kind of pull it out and let them open a present. And the present's going to be like a Slinky or a box of crayons or something. And, dude, kids love that, dude, because now they weren't expecting anything. Now they have like a gift. And it's something that will occupy them for another period of time.
I implemented your strategy on a road trip we took to Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
About 4 hours. Worked brilliantly.
Yeah.
Brilliantly. The problem was, or should I say was, the problem is I'm a little bit scared about the length of this trip. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how long is the bribery parenting technique going to be effective?
Well, yeah. Well, the other thing that I mentioned before was that it's the more of this, the more driving that you can do during sleeping times, the better.
That's right. That's right.
Right. So, you know, you spend the day before the trip changing your sleep schedule a little bit, you know, and, you know, adjusting so that you are awake during times when you're normally asleep. And then leave, and, you know, if you were going to leave at 8 in the morning, well, what happens if you leave at 2 in the morning, you know? And you just kind of, the night before, you get the car ready with blankets and pillows, and in the middle of the night, you just pick up your kids and throw them in the car, and they go back to sleep, and then you drive, and they'll wake up at 7 in the morning. But that's a lot of hours that you accomplished without having to worry about them. And also, you haven't even distributed any of your toys yet. So,
dude, you're brilliant. I don't know how you do it.
Yeah. Dude, we don't even have like a DVD player or whatever else that people have these days.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. The trip itself is part of the vacation. In fact, when I look back at my old vacations I took when I was a kid, I hardly remember the destination, you know? And as I say it, I hear the old cliche. It's, what is it? How does that go? Like, it's not the destination. It's the
journey.
It's the journey. It is, you know, I remember riding in the car in the middle of the night and playing those stupid games with the, you know, the license plate game. And, you know, so there's lots of that. And those games also are very good time, you know, time wasters.
Well, we're looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to some time with the family. I'm going to get some studying done while I'm on the trip, too. Lots of reading.
Sure.
One of my professors for this global Christian history course I'm taking, Ray Bakke, he is an expert on church history. And he, when I signed up for the course that I'll be going out to the Seattle area in May, he mailed me 15 CDs. Each one was an hour long of lectures that he gave in the 80s, I guess.
That
just talk about the entire history of the church. And so that'll give us plenty to listen to between my wife and I on the ride down.
Wow. I wonder if it'll sound like it's from the 80s.
I hope so. I hope there's Axel F playing in the intro and outro.
What's his name?
This is...
Thank you for inviting me to your rad establishment. It is extraordinarily tubular. That'd be so awesome. If he does that, you have to report back.
I will let you know if he says the words totally radical. I'm coming to you today live in my parachute pants.
In my jams.
Alrighty,
dude. What was some 80s clothing that you remember?
I definitely had the jams and the parachute pants.
Yeah.
The ruse.
Ruse? Oh, the shoes.
Shoes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What's in the pocket of those ruse?
Yeah, I had a pair of ruse.
Mm-hmm. I used to keep the lunch money in there.
Yeah. Exactly.
Get up there in line. Like, hold on a second. Zip.
Yes, this is very convenient. Excuse me while I just bend over and try to unzip this zipper that has dirt and salt crusted over top of it.
You know, the lunch ladies love that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so the ruse, yeah, those were good.
Zips, remember those shoes?
Zips. What were the zips?
Okay, Will Smith kind of...
Immortalized
them. Yes, thank you. I was looking for that word in one of his early rap songs when he wanted to buy it. I said, buy Adidas and you bought me zips.
Oh, mm-hmm. Parents just don't understand.
Parents just don't understand. A classic of the, was that the 80s?
That was the 80s.
Definitely. Well, we digress. So the zips were these really cheap shoes that you could get, and they were pretty bad.
I remember the girls had the jelly shoes and the jelly bracelets,
mm-hmm.
right? My wife, I think, had a bunch of those. And the Jordache jeans? Remember the girls wanted the Jordache jeans?
Yeah, I think girls got hit a little bit harder by the 80s than the boys did, because they had those roll-up things on leg warmers.
That's the word
I was looking for.
Yeah.
And also the big bangs. The hairstyles for the 80s mm-hmm. for the girls were not kind to them. Although the men had the flock of seagulls look going on and that kind of thing.
I had the bowl cut, and I had lines shaved in the side of my head, as we previously talked about in an older show, immortalized by Brian Bosworth.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. And you didn't just have a bowl cut. You had the bowl cut.
Yeah.
It was perfect.
Yeah. I like to find bowl cut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was like, that was like who I was back then.
Perfectly shaved underneath. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
Whoever came up with that concept.
Yeah. I don't know. It was probably just some lady in a hair salon. Cause I just went in, you know, I'm like, whatever, make my hair short, you know?
Is that how it really went down, or did you request the bowl cut?
No, I didn't. I didn't request anything. I just, my mom's like, it's time for a haircut. So you go and whatever happens, happens.
I think the bowl cut was a direct response to the mullet.
Yeah.
You know, it officially put the stamp on it. You know, the mullet is dead. The bowl is here.
Yeah, the 80s were awesome. You know, and I'm thinking also, you know, along this whole line of vacations, but did you guys have a station wagon?
Oh, yeah.
Like the family truckster?
We've talked about that. My parents actually bought the Telep's old station wagon.
Oh, yeah.
And
gave
that to me as my car. Like, I was supposed to drive that around when I was 16.
That was an 80s era station wagon, but was that the 90s that when you got that thing?
I think it was. It was very not cool by the time I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's great. And, you know, I've been saying for 10 years, I don't know if it's happened or not, but I'm predicting, if it hasn't already, that the station wagon is again going to become cool.
Okay.
And that at some point in maybe the next 10 years at car shows and like car cruises and stuff, people are going to have souped up, you know, retro station wagons with like the wood paneling and all that other good stuff.
I will be looking out for that. But I want to ask you, did you ever take an entire vacation sitting in the seats in the back of the station wagon that faced the other direction?
Yes.
What was that like
for
you?
We were a station wagon family, right?
I'm sure if you had that many kids.
Yeah, we had a lot of kids and we were a station wagon family because it suited our family's needs, right? Me being the youngest, always in the back. So I was in station wagons. I remember station wagons before there was the seat. And then whenever there was a vacation or whatever, I'm just laying across everybody's luggage in the very back. You know, you don't see that these days. Yeah,
no.
I'm pretty much a torpedo waiting to happen in case we're in a head-on collision. And then I remember the seat happened, and dude, the backward facing seat was horrible.
Right.
Yeah. You're forced to stare at whoever is the unfortunate person to be behind you.
Do you make eye contact or not?
I try not to make eye contact. But there's nothing else to look at. You can't even see the signs of where you're going. All you see is the metal backs of all the signs as they go away from you. You have no idea where you're going. You have no idea what city you're in. All you see is the backs of things that the rest of the family got to see, you know, earlier in time.
So you have a completely different vacation than everyone else in
right.
your family.
Yeah, it's horrible. And then the last station wagon I remember was having, it didn't have a rear-facing seat necessarily. It had two side-facing seats. It faced inward.
Ooh, I remember those.
It like folded in. And so you didn't have to look at the person behind you. You had to look at the person across from you.
That must have been awkward, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you get that cranked neck from always having your head tilted to the side whenever you want to interact with anybody.
Exactly, exactly.
I see what you're saying. I wonder how we made it through childhood, really. It was such agony.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, like I said before, you remember the journey. You remember, you know, all of the craziness and the crying and the, you know, your siblings, you know, poking at you and punching you and whatever else you go through on those long car rides with your siblings. You know, you remember all that somehow. Somehow you remember it fondly.
Well, I'll tell you this. When we take our trip next week and the kids are going at it with each other, I'm going to turn around and tell them, someday you're going to remember this fondly because Steve said so.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this from your from all of your schooling that you have.
Oh, here we go.
Why is it that whenever we look back in the past, we only remember the good stuff? Or we seem to. Like, think back of your childhood, right? Awesome, right?
Mm-hmm.
You think of all this great adventure and everything that you had, and you, your brain holds on to that. It totally lets go of, like, the boring days that you went through or the rainy days that you had to sit in your house and watch TV all day. You only remember, like, the time where you were, like, trouncing through the woods and stuff. Why do we do that?
I don't know. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
I will have to check with my people, and I'll get back to you on that one.
I bet you there's a very... I bet you there, this has been studied.
Right.
Like you wouldn't believe.
Well, I mean, what, off the top of my head, I mean, not all kids... A lot of people do carry, you know, bad baggage. I think you and I were blessed with awesome childhoods, and I'm so thankful still to our parents that...
Right.
That they
no, you're right about that.
Us like that, where we were kind of freed up to be kids, and so we have all those good memories.
Yeah.
But also, I think people are very resilient. If you just think about how God made us, we're very resilient.
Right.
And so that probably has something to do with it.
Sure.
Too.
I'm not saying that we forget about the bad things, but you know, there's a for a lot of us, I think there's this period of time where we just. It's so the memories are good that you know our brain we have selective memory for some reason.
I agree with you.
Yeah, but I'm glad about it too. You know, I think back at the 80s. In the 80s, I was probably like, yeah, the 80s. These are just pretty crappy times. And now when I think back at like freaking roller skating rinks and you know. The stupid Valentine's Day dances and all the stuff that at the time you're just like, oh, whatever. I'm just going to do this because I have nothing better to do today. And now it defines your past.
I would say that's true as an adult too. When I think back on my time, I lived in California for 6 years in my 20s.
Sure.
And I think back and there's a lot of really good memories. Even though there were bad things that happened while we were out there, the things that come to my mind are, oh, wow, I remember that. Or remember that time at the coast when we went there and, you know, had a really good time. There could have been an 18-hour traffic jam
for us
getting there. I have no recollection of that.
Yeah, especially where you lived.
That's true. That was true everywhere we went.
Yeah, it was, just traffic jam everywhere.
It's California, baby.
It is, but, you know, people look back and they love California.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you tend to ignore the stuff that, you know, isn't so great, and then you hold on to the, you know, in college, too. You find that with college.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, at some point in my life, I looked back to college, and I'm like, oh, man, I really miss that. You know, there's an aspect of that. I love my life now. I mean, I love, don't get me wrong, I love, you know, marriage, I love fatherhood. But at some point in my life, I remember looking back, and I'm like, dude, college was dude, just... You know, the freedom that you have, and you can just eat whatever you wanted, and you never gained any weight, and you could do whatever you want. You could schedule your own classes. You had no job, no responsibilities. You lived in the dorm, and you had just free hot water and long showers and a meal plan. Dude, that was awesome, you know?
It's funny that you say that because I've been thinking recently. It makes me laugh to think what it would be like right now at the stage of life that you and I are in to wake up in the morning whenever we wanted to.
Yeah.
Let's just say it's a weekday and just basically do whatever we wanted to and not think about anybody else or anything else other than ourselves.
Right. Like the biggest thing that you had to worry about is I have an exam on Friday that I need to study for. Like, that's your job for the whole week is to study a chapter for a history exam. And that's your only responsibility.
Yep. Yeah. I clearly remember watching back-to-back sports centers at that time.
Yeah.
And they would play the sports center for an hour, and then the same sports center would come on
and you'd keep
for
watching
the second hour. And I would watch it. And I just go, why did I just watch two sports centers? I don't know. Why do we even care about sports this much? I don't know, but I can.
Right.
Maybe I'll go over to the cafeteria now and grab some lunch.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I remember watching Conan O'Brien, and then whoever the guy is after him, and then if I'm still awake, I flip onto SportsCenter and watch the looping SportsCenter that's on all night long, and then, you know, roll in bed at... Dude, I remember doing crazy, stupid stuff at 3 in the morning with my roommates in the dorm, and then just going to sleep and waking up at 10 or 11 going to lunch.
Yeah, in your sweatpants.
Yeah. And for some reason, like I'm at the time, I remember thinking, boy, this is really hard.
Life is so tough.
These tests. I don't know what all these adults are talking about. They don't have to take all these tests.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, we need to, you know, if anybody has any insight on that, they need to email us.
Yeah.
Journeymenpodcast@gmail.com.
Let us know your college experiences and what you think about that. Well, we got to wrap it up, baby.
All right. Check out our website, journeymenpodcast.com.
You can get the links to my blog
there. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We definitely have some things to talk about from your blog that we didn't get to today, but we definitely need to pursue that.
We'll do that, but make sure you make the title of this podcast, Brian and Steve Weigh In on Healthcare Reform. And I know we're going to get 500 downloads this week.
That's a good idea. I would feel kind of dirty doing that because we talked about healthcare for like 5 seconds.
That's true. But same thing with the Olympics happened.
Oh, so. That's true. We definitely need to game iTunes a little bit more than we are.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, I will check out your blog at bkmccabe@blogspot.com.
Yep. And what's your Twitter?
Twitter.com/Steve Brennan. BRENNAN.
All right.
I'll catch you in 2 weeks.
Sounds good.
Later.
Minutes of Mayhem.
I thought that would be interesting to kick around a little bit.
Yeah.
And then healthcare reform as like a news item.
Killing me. I have no thoughts about that. That's my problem with it. And it dominated the news. There's no other news except that.
I know. Ready to roll with this bad boy?
Sure.
This is very professional.
It never has been, and that's why it's so good. You ready?
Let's do this.
Oh, wait. I love this part. This part from up right here.